Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our scenario is entitled Bird's Head, and this is episode 3. It was written by Mick Swan, who is also our GM, and the recap will be given by Thomas McKeon. So sit back and imagine the tropical heat of the South Seas. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Tom?
Thanks, Tom. Not much happened in our last sessions, actually. As we were sailing to Australia, to Darwin to be specific, we came across a strange ritual, so to speak. The captain and the first mate had taken two petty officers, and put them on the deck. Oddly enough, we were on the deck as well, and when we approached, we saw that they were naked and that the rest of the crew were banging broomsticks on the deck. We were confused and we watched, and when they started proclaiming to Father Dagon and Mother Hydra, we became a little concerned, but it turned out that it was just a prank as they were crossing over the international dateline. We then landed in Darwin, where we began our journey towards Papua New Guinea. And that is all I have written.
That sounds about it.
Yeah, that's really all that happened last session.
Yep, that's about it. Well, I think when we left you last time, you had received a message from a Professor Brian Lara.
Mm-hmm.
Of Darwin.
And I believe we were going to go speak with him, weren't we?
I think you were just about to do that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his name again?
Brian Lara. Dr. Brian, or Professor Brian Lara. Laher. He's an ethnologist.
All right.
Right.
So I'm assuming we hop on the train or whatever and we go there.
What do you think? There's a tram, or you could get a taxi.
I don't know what kind of use I'm going to be on this. I am not a professor, but I'll go along with you.
All right. Anybody else?
I'll join you.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you know, I jump on the tram that's going towards the university, I would hope.
What about Doctors Ardu and Donovan?
Yeah, we should all go, I guess.
Yeah, it goes well.
I think it would probably be a good idea if everybody went, but...
Well, we'll make a day of it. Maybe we'll get something to eat afterwards.
Good plan.
Don't split the party.
Don't split the party.
Oh, there's a party? Nobody said there was going to be a party.
There's always a party with us.
Pijo, I think you pretty much bring the party.
Thank you.
If you're going by tram, you have to change the tram once, but that gives you an opportunity to ask for some more directions again, which gets you.
Yeah,
going there. The nearest tram stop is about, it's only like 4 or 5 minutes walk away from the address. It's not a big city by any means.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's quite a small place. It's quite easy to find, you know, it's well signposted, and maybe make a couple of wrong turns, you get there, it's quite easy to find his house. It's a quite nice house. I don't know how to describe the architecture. It looks like every other house in the street. It's brown with some white bits. And sort of faux Georgian windows.
So right.
It's got an English look to it. Yes.
Yeah. It's probably Victorian, probably late Victorian, as most of the buildings in that area seem to be.
Well, looks like the professor's doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seems like it.
Nice house.
Did he say what he was a professor of?
He's an anthropologist, isn't he? Well, he's an ethnologist, which is kind of
ethnologist, yeah. Huh? So basically, yeah. He can say that guy's Chinese and that guy's not.
Something well, very I much mean, like that. Yeah.
I don't know. You can get a degree in ethnology.
So, well, I guess go up to the door, knock on the door, and see if he answers.
Yeah, let's go. Okay.
There's a bit of a pause, and then you hear some footsteps and a loud cough, and the door is opened by quite an elderly man. He looks like he must be in his early 70s at least.
So probably a retired professor then.
He has a few wisps of hair over a balding pate. And a pair of glasses hanging on a cord around his neck. And he's quite well dressed, but a little bit shabby.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of cranes his head. I think he doesn't look like he's used to the sunlight. And says, can I help you at all?
Hello, we're from Miskatonic University. We were going to be speaking with a Dr. Lara.
Oh, right. Yes, of course, yes. There's quite a lot of you. Come in. And he ushers you in into a rather dusty and untidy study. And He gestures for Dr. Chase to sit down and just sort of waves his finger in the air and just says one moment and
all right.
Wanders off, and over the next few minutes returns a few times with various chairs that he's collected from around the house.
All right.
Some of them dining room chairs, a couple of them folding chairs, and a stool. And he just stands there and counts you, and then counts the stairs and mutters something, and then goes and sits down in his seat and says, I remember, yes, right, that's it. You're from Miskatonic, isn't it? Miskatonic.
Yes, we are.
That's right. Because Dr. Joyce said that you were coming, so I put a few bits and pieces together for you.
All right. Well, what can you maybe thank tell you. Us about? Yeah. Thank
well,
you. Thank you.
Can I just ask what are your disciplines of you?
I'm a biology professor at Miskatonic University. I am also I'm from Australia originally, so I'm going to go try and get back to my hometown.
Right, well, I'm an archaeology doctorate. I just got my doctorate, and this is pretty much my first expedition, so I'm kind of eager to get out in my field and start working.
Archaeology, yeah, right. What about the rest of you?
Ornithology here.
Oh, right. That could work.
Herpetology.
Ah, even better. Yeah.
Birds
and lizards. Give me just a moment. What about the other two fellows there? What are you?
Anthropology.
Oh, right. You're one of us. Yeah, lovely. You'll have a marvelous time over there. There's all sorts of things to study. And you there?
Well, I ain't no highfalutin doctor like any of them. I'm a cartographer, sir.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, they like you out there, don't they, the Dutch? They like their
maps. They like their little maps all drawn out.
They like their maps and their surveys. They're after the copper, you know. But look, I don't want to let the rest of you down. But look, you two fellas, what was the bird man and the lizard fella? What were your names again?
The bird.
Jack. Call me Jack.
Jack. And you fella, what do I call you?
Damien Donovan.
Jack and Damien. Right, look, fellas, I don't want to lock the rest of you out or anything, but maybe your biologist fella might find this interesting as well. But just I've been over there in New Guinea a few times, and I've had a few things passed on to me over the years. Now a lot of it wouldn't interest anyone, I would imagine. But if you're going out to the Bird's Head, which is where Dr. Joyce says you were going, I've got a couple of little bits and pieces I'd like to show you. Now,
interesting.
There's two things, really.
I do have a little bit of an interest in biology, so I'm listening in on this as well.
Well, it has to do with I suppose a legend you'd call it, but I mean, to the people who live out there, it's not a legend. They say they've seen this thing. You know, it's part of their culture. But here we go, and he reaches into his desk and pulls out a big wad of papers and starts fumbling through it until he finds. Just an old brown envelope, about an A5 envelope, and he peers inside it and says, "Ah, right, yeah, here we go. What do you make of this? Now, look, I mean, this now, even your anthropologists and so forth might find this interesting because I was shown a couple of photographs. I'll tell you the story that goes with them in a minute, but I'd like you to know, like you to tell me what you think of this. This is apparently, now, I was shown this, and the fella who found it was a Dutch fella that I met in the German territory, and he said that when he took the photograph of this thing, he said that it's damaged. And the fellows told him that it's supposed to have wings.
Ooh, This
is what they call the ropen. Now this is like a flying creature, but it's not like a mythical animal. When you talk to the fellows up there, the fellows out in the bush up there about this thing, you know, they've got their spirits and gods and things, but this thing, they say, no, this is an animal, mate. This is like, you know, you have to watch this or it'll come down and steal your pigs. It's like a proper thing to them, this is.
And what did you call it again, sir?
They call it the ropen.
Ropen.
They call it the ropen.
Interesting.
That is really.
They say it flies, and it's meant to make a light in the sky when it flies.
You probably mentioned this, but does he actually have the statue, or is it a picture of a statue?
No, it's just a photograph of a statue. Okay. It's quite a dog-eared photograph of the statue.
So.
I don't know where the original statue is. I presume that the fellow who took a photograph of it had it.
So it's a legend about this kind of bird-like creature, or almost like a fairy or something, that comes down and steals fruits from plantations or something?
Oh, no, it eats animals. It's taking kids, they say. But
real.
Jesus.
I don't know, say it's a big thing. Big leathery wings and pointy head with a crest. Now this, I mean, as an ethnologist, I could say to you that this is a cult object, that this is just, you know, this is a carving.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this other photograph. Now, this photograph was taken in 1919 by a fellow called De Groot, who he was one of the people not quite onto the Bird's Head Peninsula, but getting up that way. He tried and for some reason failed to start a...
I'm kind of wondering what the ornithologist thinks of that thing. Being some kind of a big bird? Looks like a, what's that thing called? A toucan?
It definitely has bird features.
Well, my initial thought is maybe it's related to one of the bird-headed gods of Egypt. I mean, there's a lot of different religious crossovers between different cultures, yeah. So maybe they had a similar idea. It kind of looks almost a little bit like Thoth to me.
Well, like I say, it's a very ritualized object. You know, it's not an interpretation. It's within their style, mm-hmm. rather than an accurate representation, I think.
Is it actually human-sized, man-sized?
I think he said it was about 8 inches tall.
So quite a large creature.
The statue was 8 inches tall.
They say
that things have got a wingspan of about like sort of 12 to 15 feet.
Holy shit. Wow.
Big old thing. Huh. Now.
Interesting.
Like a demon.
Can I make possibly an intelligence roll to associate it with something that I, as an anthropologist, have some background in archaeology?
Yeah, could I make an archaeology roll as well to see if I would associate it with anything directly? Maybe I've heard something more about it.
You can if you'd like to. Yes.
Which I completely fail.
Thomas?
I'm pulling up a dice roller here. Just give me one sec. And I fail, but I only fail by 5. Is it possible for me to spend luck points or no?
Well, I'm not sure it's really worth it. I mean, all you can really ascertain really is that you can see that it's clearly broken, so it would have had some sort of structure on the back of it. Mm-hmm. The style looks like the style of possibly similar to the style of the Western Highlands of New Guinea, but different enough that you know it's from a different region. You can see it's quite stylized. It's relatively sophisticated in type. It's not a simplistic figurine. There are some interesting elements to the carving. But without actually having the actual physical piece in front of you, it's very difficult to draw any real conclusions about it. Okay. Certainly, it looks like there are cult images that you've seen from a variety of other cultures that follow a similar sort of figurative pattern.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, my first instinct then is that it's possibly some sort of protective symbol, like it's supposed to protect against this creature.
Well, I wouldn't know. I mean, I was shown it completely out of context, and really, the fellow who showed me it as a curio.
Okay. Okay.
No, I've never seen the original piece.
Well, I got to tell you that if that thing comes swooping out of the air at me, I'm going to shoot it.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because, like I say, about 1919, this fellow De Groot went out up that way, and he was looking to start a tobacco plantation, and the whole project went belly up. Never got off the ground.
Huh.
Couldn't get the locals to work for him. Couldn't get supplies in. Couldn't get anyone to plant up there. Humidity killed off all the plants that he brought with him. It was just a disaster. It wasn't, you know, the insects ate things. It's like, you know, it's not. It wasn't the right crop for the place. But what he did manage to do before his business went down the pan was he built himself a little house and a couple of drying barns. And as his crops were failing and he couldn't find anyone to work for him, he apparently spent quite a lot of his time taking photographs. And one afternoon, the way I hear it from this German fellow was that it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He heard a big panicking noise in the local village. You know, which, you know, bear in mind, is a good sort of like half a mile away.
Jeez.
There was a sound of general agitation, and then about 5-6 minutes later, this thing flew over the top of his drying barn. And as chance would have it, he kind of took a photograph. Now, bear in mind that, I mean, you know, this is 5 years ago, and it wasn't much of a camera. I think it was just a little box brownie or something, but he got the best picture he could. But see what you make of this, especially like Jack, mate, have a look at this. In fact, both of you, what do you make of this thing? Oh, I'm sorry, I've just turned into a rostrum cameraman. What do you think of that?
Goodness.
I mean,
holy crap. You know, we have legends back in the South about Springheel Jack, and that is pretty damn strange looking.
Well, he said it had
looks like almost like a flying dinosaur of some sort.
Now the way he told it to this German fellow was that the what looks like a long neck on the front of it, he said that was its head. It had a long sort of beak with a big lump on the end. It may even have. He said it may even have had something in its beak. He wasn't sure, but I mean, he only saw
like
it for a few seconds. It could be. It might have been like a
spoonbill, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. But I really
Jack,
don't know.
What do you think?
What do you think, Jack?
You're the bird guy.
Yeah, it's hard from the tell from the picture. I mean, you can't read too much into these things. So, if I understand you right, you're saying the bulb on the left is something in its beak, so its head would be the next bulb to the right as you're looking at it?
Yeah, that'd be about right. So that long bit that looks like a neck out the front, that's actually it's beak.
Okay,
which matches the statue description.
Yeah, long thin beak, winged.
You know, when you first put the picture up there, that's not what I thought. You see the round bulb sort of on one side, and then on the other side of the wing on the other you see another one. I thought those were maybe its hands, and it's got its arms out to the sides and its wings behind it as it's flying forward. I don't know, it's very strange.
Oh, I kind of see what you're saying, P.J.
Well, I was told
we're looking at its back.
It was coming over the building, so it was going sort of in this direction.
All right, so it is flying that way.
And
gotcha.
And this, can you see my cursor? Yeah. I don't know what that word means, but I'll use it anyway. so that this was its beak, and it either had some sort of appendage here or was holding something.
Oh,
and that this was its head.
Very odd.
This, he seemed to think, was its neck, and of course these its wings. But what makes me wonder is I've been wondering about this bit, because that almost looks like the wing of a bat or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's got a hand on the end of its wing.
Maybe a dragon.
But, you know,
well, it definitely does look like a bat's, like the upper thumb part of the bat's wing to me.
The reason why I was interested in getting your perspective on it, Damien, is because the locals talk about it having leathery wings.
Now, if we're getting some sort of an idea of its size compared to that house in the bottom corner, if it's on the other side of that house, it's huge.
Yeah.
Almost like a big old thing. Well, how?
Mick, pterodactyls have been established, correct? We have restorations of skeletal structures.
Oh yeah.
So I'm going to look to the group and I'm going to say it looks like a pterodactyl.
You know, that's exactly what my thought was. That was my initial thought. I mean,
doesn't look like a bat or a.
It looks like it could be some sort of large, previously undiscovered pterodactyl species.
Flying reptile, gliding.
Yeah, those little bulbs at the middle of its wings. Pterodactyls commonly had three small fingers to cling to rocks,
didn't they? And then the back part is quite obviously its talons, and the front part would have to be its beak. So maybe it does have like a spoon-shaped beak. But most pterodactyls, don't they have fairly longish necks?
I mean, there are like the Pterodactyl maximum. It had a smaller beak. Most of them had the crest, and it goes up.
Yeah.
But this one doesn't seem to have a crest. It could just be the angle of the photo.
I'm personally not entirely sure I believe in the whole evolution thing. However, if we were to apply that concept, wouldn't this be, what did you call it, a pterodactyl? Pterodactyl that's evolved from pterodactyls. So it's not necessarily going to look like anything you're going to find in a fossil record.
Very true. Well,
it's been millions of years.
True. That's very possible. And I mean, in something like the jungle, that's a pretty unexplored area. I mean, there could be species of pterodactyl or pterodactyl ancestors that did appear in the jungle and are still alive in the jungle. And I mean, we wouldn't know about them. They're too big. It's too thick out there.
If you think you've seen enough of this, I'll let me make you a cup of tea and I'll tell you the what I know about the legend.
Oh, please do. We'd be very interested to hear that.
Now, it's also, just to throw this out there, I was once hiking through the woods with a partner of mine, and he didn't know much about birds, and a blue heron flew over the treetops. He swore it was a pterodactyl. So everything is relative. Everything seems a bit bigger when you're first confronted with it. Let's not get carried away.
I've actually had a similar experience with a stork, my friend.
The largest wingspan.
Yeah, I've seen blue herons, so.
I think the largest wingspan of a bird is an albatross, which is close to 11 feet. And they do have that sort of bulbish tip to the beak, so it could be a part of the family of the albatross.
An albatross that far inland?
Well, they're mostly a seabird, so. It's, you know, we're talking about on an island, right?
True.
Well, like I say, I never met the fella myself, and I got the story and the photograph secondhand. So, the fella was out there with a failing business. There's nothing to say he wasn't hitting the source.
Well, I'll tell you right now, if we encounter anything like that, I'm bringing it back to you dead.
I don't blame you, Pijo.
Well, now.
Yeah,
well,
I agree with you,
Pijo,
there.
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's not get trigger happy. If this is a one-of-a-kind thing, this could be a huge scientific discovery.
Well, could it really be a one-of-a-kind thing? There'd have to be a whole bunch of them.
But if there were a whole bunch of them, there would be way more recorded sightings. It wouldn't just be a legend. It would be...
True, it would be more...
Well, except that there's just lots of area out there that's unexplored.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the funny,
well, it's
the
explored,
funny
it's just not
though,
explored by the first world.
The local fellows, they say it comes out at night. which is kind of odd because this photograph was taken during the day.
That's unusual.
So it's normally more of like a bat type nocturnal creature. I mean, are there birds that fly at night? Terror.
Is there any odd things that happen to it when it's flying at night? Anything like that?
Well, they talk of a light in the sky, like a greenish light. And I mean, now, this part I can tell you about because I've seen the lights. Now, this was years before I was shown this photograph, but I was out in the Western Highlands with the Qajari people. And one night we were sitting by the fire, and there were four or five green lights up above the tree canopy moving around. And I thought they were just like, you know, fireflies or something just above us. But they were saying they were roping off in the distance.
Hmm.
And the funny thing is, well, in my mind, a funny thing was that the lights, they weren't constant. They'd get brighter and duller.
Huh.
Like suddenly they'd get very, very bright. Then they'd fade away again.
Interesting.
It was very odd. I mean, I know there's things, there's all sorts of things like will-o'-the-wisps and things that can cause lights like that. I mean, I didn't see any great big flying monsters. But I didn't hear anything, well, other than the insects, but you'll know what I mean about that when you get there. You know, there's a lot of noise at night.
Yeah.
It could easily have been some kind of natural phenomenon that's just become part of their culture. I mean, I'm not for a moment saying that these are real things that are out there. I'm just, you know, Dr. Joyce asked me if I'd share a bit of information with you, and this is about the most interesting thing I've got.
No.
Sound like a foghorn.
Maybe they had a ship come in. I don't know. Well,
I'm sorry. I think my cat wants to come in from the garden. Can you excuse me for a moment?
All right.
Can we look Bubble. Around his room while Bubble. He's out?
Yeah, I mean,
Beelzy Bubbles, come on.
Are you describing his work area as if this is kind of an eccentric professor who's got a lot of junk and it's organized in his mind, but not to anyone else's.
It's very much that. By the looks of it, you get the idea that his primary filing system relies on the depth of dust. it's very dusty. It's very cluttered. But there does seem to be a sort of order to it.
Mm-hmm. Method to the madness.
He's not just some nutcase pottering around. You can see that there's definitely... There are works in progress. There's that coherent notes and writings that he's obviously in the middle of. That he's obviously keeping up with his work.
Yeah, obviously the dust is getting to Arthur.
Yeah,
that's why I said bless you.
It's very dusty. You know, especially since he opened the door to let the cat in, it's blown up a bit of the air.
I say, the triple wart sea devil. It's a breed of anglerfish.
Mm-hmm.
The anglerfish, they got these lights on the front of their heads that attract fish. Fish are attracted to the shining light. Mm-hmm. What if this is some sort of like Pijo said, an evolutionary trait of theirs?
That would be feasible. I mean, if a fish can evolve it, certainly a bird could.
Well, or like you were saying, a pterodactyl or some sort of lizard thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that right? Isn't a dinosaur a lizard?
Well...
Well, reptile, but it's related. It's a similar like family. It's not. It's definitely the same like.
Oh, general I keep group, thinking is, but... if that thing flies over and takes a dump on us, oh my god.
Yeah. I mean,
if it uses the light to attract prey, that may be the least of our worries.
Well, it sounds like it usually comes out at night, and it's primarily focused on fish. So, if what he's saying is true, so I don't think we have anything to really worry about. I don't think humans are in its on the menu. I don't think.
Well, you said it it's taking babies.
Taking children, yeah. So it's certainly, maybe it is after.
Well, look, if I see a big light coming at me from the sky, I'm shooting it.
Yeah, I'm with Pedro on this one.
There you go. I hope it's not somebody.
I've brought you some tea there. There's a few biscuits. I don't know how fresh they are.
Well, it's all right. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, tuck in. Now, as I say, I was passed this by a German fella. God alone knows where you'd find him. I mean, you know, it was a few years ago, and maybe he went back there, maybe he went back to Germany. I wouldn't know where to start looking for him. But, you know, he didn't have a very high opinion of the Dutch fella.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go into any details, but I didn't get the impression that they were friends. I have no idea how he got hold of the picture.
Hmm.
What was his name, the German fella?
You know, I can barely pronounce it. It was Joachim or Joachim or something like that. I don't know.
Joachim. That would be Joachim. It's a biblical name. Joachim.
Joachim Frass. I think his name was Frass or Frass. One or the other. I mean, he was just a fellow. You know, he's just like a I don't know what they call him now, but years ago they would have called them adventurers or you know, just fellows who go out in the bush looking for opportunities, business opportunities,
so he was an explorer,
whatever that would be. Well, kind of, yeah. He wasn't an academic man, you know, just one of those fellows who go off looking for gold and jewels and trying to make a fortune and things. And
gotcha.
You know, when I met him, I think he was a bit short of the readies. So, you know, he sold me these pictures for a few bucks as a curio.
So now
it was really the picture of the statue that interests me, because, you know, it's an interesting artifact. But he wouldn't put up with the original.
Have you ever been able to figure anything out about the statue in the years since?
Well, it's Western, and it's certainly it's in the style you'd expect. If there's a coherence of styles in the region, you would expect some variant on that style to be the predominant style of that region in the Bird's Head Peninsula. But other than as I'm sure at least a couple of you know, there was a Dutch expedition up there. The first expedition in, they were the fellas who really annexed it and planted the flag. That was what, 1920? And I don't know what they brought back with them.
Yeah, that was the Landau expedition.
They did a little bit of mapping of the valley. And
have you ever seen any other you ever seen any other examples of this thing, this kind of statue?
There was something about 6 years ago. There was a dealer in Canberra had a piece that was kind of similar, but it was just a mask. And the mask did bear a resemblance to the head of that statue.
Now,
I mean, it was a wearable mask. It wasn't a hanging mask. It was a wearable ritual mask, which, you know, I mean, you'd expect. They're big on their rituals and dances, those folks.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a little curious concerning the supposed kidnappings this creature did. Did they ever find any remains or anything of anybody who was supposedly attacked by this thing?
Oh, do you know, I think that's, I mean, that's way more specific than any information I've ever been given. I mean, I've been told that they take babies. I've been told that they take pigs. No one's ever supplied a verifiable case of
right,
one
so
of these things.
Yeah, it sounds
very
like
much
something
a strange legend.
That you tack onto the end of a story to make it sound even scarier.
God.
Yeah, I mean, I was told the legends by other people, and two or three tribes have told me the legends, and then that photo. You know, and whether the photograph actually shows you a real live ropen, or whether it's just an old bedsheet window or something, I couldn't tell you, but.
Well, true. It very well could have been something that got kicked up by the wind and just looks bird-like. That's probably what it is.
Well, look, I mean, if it's of use to you, you know, there they are.
All right, well.
You're welcome to
borrow
them.
Thank you for the information anyway.
I'd appreciate you bringing them back. But,
thank you.
You know, I thought this is about the only thing I know. Well, not the ropen, but the statue is about the only thing I know that I think looks like it came from the peninsula.
Hmm.
The
other photograph could be a very convincing fake. I mean, maybe he did something like throw a bedsheet up in the air. Just to have something to bring back to get famous over.
I don't agree with that. I really think it's the real deal. There's no way that guy can fake that kind of.
That Barnum fellow, he made quite a bit of several like gaffes that looked very real. You know?
Well, except that this guy's not trying to make any money out of it.
Well, how do you know he wasn't trying to make money off it? He had a failed plantation. Maybe he was trying to recoup his losses by inventing this story about how he saw the ropen or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you, all I can say is, I mean, from your perspective, Jack, be a nice thing to pin your name to if you get hold of one.
Do the locals, is that what they call us, the ropen? Is there
Well, I mean, the tribe that I was with call it the ropen.
Okay.
And then others, it has different names in different dialects, but Flying Terror or the yeah, all sorts of different things.
Well, I actually got a question on you. So you've been to New Zealand? I mean, New Guinea. What's the terrain like? Is it mountainous? Is it flat? Is it?
Oh, it changes. It changes very, very rapidly.
So it's kind of
the area you're going into. I know you'll be heading into the Big Valley, which is pretty easy going by Guinea standards. I mean, it's not flat, but it's, you know, it's almost pasture.
Wow.
You know, villages with big gardens and fields. It's supposed to be very beautiful, but then once you head up into the highlands and the mountains, you get very steep terrain. In any of the jungle, it's so thick that you're in single file and you're cutting your way through, and it'll take you a day to get a mile and a half.
Wow.
Especially if you're dealing with the bearers and you've got to keep all the bearers in order and get not lose any of your stuff, not have anyone falling over.
Now, are there any like particularly venomous or dangerous animals we should be aware of while we're out in there?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of that. Snakes, spiders, all sorts. I mean, I've no idea what you'll find. Every expedition I've been out on over there, we've had people. We had a fellow on our expedition, a mycologist. He sat down just to tie his shoelace, and found two new species of fungus growing on the log he was sitting on. So, you know, it's an exciting place. I mean, certainly.
I mean, fungus.
Birds and I'm not so sure about lizards. I mean, we saw lizards and snakes and things there. Birds and insects, my God, yeah. You have no shortage of, you'll find something. I guarantee you'll find something. And it won't be that difficult either.
I'm just looking for something nice and high that I can stand on so I can do some surveying.
Mm-hmm. Well, where you're going, you've got two mountain ranges, you know. You've got two big mountain ranges.
Hmm. Maybe we'll find some fossils out there or something, too. Might be interesting. I'm certain we'll all find something.
It's possible. I mean, I don't know how good it is for fossilization in the jungle. I would have thought everything gets picked over, but
I just don't want to find no roping coming down at me.
Pijo, it's probably nothing. Like I said, probably a blanket or something that got tossed up in the air.
Well, if I see a blanket coming at me, I'm gonna shoot it.
Well,
you think with a gun? I'm pretty sure your brain is in your gun, Pijo.
I'd go easy with. I know you American fellas like your guns, but I'd go easy with your guns out there. You know, they're friendly people. I mean, they have their wars. You know, they'll have big fights between the different groups. But
Pedro, you don't want to scare them.
For the most part, they're pretty relaxed fellas. You know, they just get on with their business. But you don't want to go looking for trouble with those fellas because.
So there's really like no tribes out there we would have an issue with as long as we're, you know, friendly, polite, and we kind of make sure we're staying level-headed.
And not shooting guns.
You wouldn't want to go near any of the uncontacted tribes without some of the local fellas.
Okay. Gotcha.
Any of them headhunters?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Plenty of headhunters.
Yeah, I think you need your head to shoot your gun, Pedro.
There's a few out there that are still cannibals, but
they
mainly eat their own dead. It's like a ritual thing, but I mean it does happen. I mean sometimes they have what they call revenge killings. Some of the tribes.
Did you just say that they eat their own dead?
Yeah,
it's called ritual cannibalism. It's fairly common, from what I understand. Some of the uncontacted tribes.
Share the spirit of the dead. It's not all of them, just some of them, you know. Some of the tribes.
It's considered a sort of mourning procedure. Some of them make mummies.
So they eat their own dead in the morning.
Well, I don't know what time of day that is.
It's sort of like a funerary rite. Sort of like how we bury our dead, they eat their dead.
Have a big feast, cook up granny.
Something about, I guess, taking the spirit into their body.
I'm just going to do my mapping, and you guys worry about people eating their dead relatives.
If you're not related to any of them, you have nothing to worry about.
Unless any of you fellas have got some more questions, I was going to plow on with my work.
Yeah, let's not bother the doctor much. Professor.
Point.
Professor,
I'm sorry. I haven't got more. But what was that, fella?
Can I ask you one more, Professor?
Yeah, please do.
The local tribes and such, is there anything that they, collect that we could bring as like a peace offering or something like tobacco or beads or money?
They like tobacco. They like their betel nuts. You might be able to get some betel nuts from a trader somewhere. They like chewing their betel nuts.
Beetle nut.
Oh, you'll find out all about betel nuts when you get there, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's their version of booze. That is the betel nut. Assume that's where they've all got the black teeth.
Well, but, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, as they say.
I think the best thing we had when we were trading with them was a knife or a machete. Doesn't even have to be a good one, to be honest. You know, metal blades. Mm-hmm. I love a metal blade.
Good to know.
Makes life a lot easier for him.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just a bag of sago, bag of rice or something. You know, I mean, bear in mind these people are hunter-gatherers. If you can give them like a bag full of rice saves them a week of work.
Wow. I'm
happy with that.
All right, gotcha.
But, you know, my one bit of advice I'd give you is to, you know, be good to your bearers. There's a lot of people go out there, they treat their bearers like rubbish.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
And you don't want to do that. When you're miles from anywhere in the middle of the bush, and those fellas are the only company you've got, you know, you want to treat them good. Because otherwise, you know, they'll be off. And you get left out there without any of the local fellas, and you're lucky to last the night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I can imagine.
Eat the wrong berries, stick your foot in the wrong bush.
Well, Professor, thank you for the biscuits and the tea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no worries.
That was some pretty good tea. Thank you.
And we'll
yes, thank you very much.
You know,
we'll leave you to it.
Right, yeah.
Thank you for the information again.
Thank you.
When you off?
Well, it should be maybe a few days now.
All right. Oh well, good luck to you then.
All right. And, thank you.
You know, let's hope you. Hope you fellas find some birds and snakes and things you can get your names on. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll definitely credit you for the help when we do.
Oh, yeah.
So we leave. Right.
Yep, that's... So...
All right, so Damien, you're telling me that there are gigantic flying lizards out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Red
I'm
reports.
Sure I believe that.
I've read many convincing reports of similar critters in the world.
Jeez, I thought everything was bigger in Texas, but holy crap.
Well, I'm still a little bit skeptical about this. I think it could be a very convincing hoax. I mean, again, you throw something in the air, or you set it up kind of on a wire, you snap a picture of it, and there you go.
Honestly,
instant fame.
And if it comes to me, I'm going to shoot it.
Yes, honestly, please do, but will shoot
think...
it.
I don't think he's faking this.
Should we go back and get something to drink? I'm parched.
Probably a good idea, but let's not drink so much we get lacquered like last time.
Yeah.
What time does our what time does the what is it the Betty Jean the Betty yeah. Jean? We're heading towards Hollandia.
Well, today is the 15th of August, and the Betty Jean leaves at 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, the 17th of August.
So, we got the rest of today, tomorrow, and then we got to be on that boat in the morning. Well,
right.
Probably we'll sleep on the boat, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been sleeping on the boat, I thought that was our plan. Just sleep on the boat, don't get a hotel.
Might be interesting to know if any of the locals also know more stories about these flying bat
lizards. It's currently 1:45 p.m.
I don't know if any of the locals will know anything about jungle-based flying bats, given they live in an area that has a massive desert.
You know, not that far away. I kind of wonder, too, if these Aussie boys are just pulling our legs.
Oh, I'm certain they are.
Watch out for them drop bears. That's what I heard the other day.
Put a coleander on your head. Smear your Marmite on your face. They won't attack you. Sure. My left foot.
Marmite on your face would be nasty. All right. Let's go get something to drink.
Goodness, right. Good for the skin.
So, let's go get some grub and some drinks. Nearest pub. Or a bar, or inn, or wherever.
Well, if there's one thing the Northern Territory has plenty of, it's pubs. Doesn't take you much time to find a pub.
Hmm. Look, there's one. There's one over there.
Yeah, you go 5 feet, you see another pub. You go another 5 feet, you see another pub.
Well, but most of the pubs will take the same form, that they're just a sort of big open thing with a bar in the middle, and a lot of surly middle-aged men standing around grumbling because a woman's just walked in. what the bloody hell is she doing in here?
You know, I'm used to this sort of treatment.
What sort
I don't
of place
even...
is this now, then?
No, I don't entertain it. I don't entertain their discussion. They got a problem, they can take it up with me. I'll deck them.
No one says anything to you, but you can just tell them they're grumbling and they don't like the idea that their male space has been invaded. It is, after all, it's 1924 in the Northern Territories of Australia. Mm-hmm. Not most, I'm not going to say anything nasty about it because there might be Australian viewers watching, but look, let's be honest, Darwin, 1924, pretty sexist. I think I can say that without being controversial.
I'm pretty sure you can say that without being controversial, yes.
And you could probably go up to 1954.
Just like you'd say without controversy that
1974 without a thought.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, you know, sit down, get some grub, order some beers. I'll let the guys do it, considering this is a man space.
Yeah. Well, I'm keen to know, once you're settled in with your beers, and some tucker, I'm keen to know particularly what Jack and Damien think about what they've seen, because Damien, you are familiar with what will one day be called cryptids. I don't know if Bernard Hoovelmans has coined that term in 1924.
As yet, undiscovered creatures.
Yes.
Yeah.
To me, the evidence is, it's certainly been around. I've heard of this specific name of this specific purported creature. Seen some evidence in the past put forward. Definitely is intriguing. I definitely want to look into this further.
Yeah. Well, similarly, I mean, as an anthropologist, Dr. Morton is aware that virtually every jungle on Earth has its tales of mysterious creatures.
Mm-hmm.
The Mekele Mbembe in the Congo, and just trying to think if Deloy's ape was, I think Deloy's ape was before 1924, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Are there any reptiles with the wingspan like that?
Are there any what, sorry?
Any reptiles with the wingspan like that?
Not
existent.
Not contemporary reptiles, no. I mean, you know that there are, as an ornithologist, you know that there are fossilized remains of prehistoric birds believed to have been that size. The Argentine bird. And of course, there's the legend of the rock.
True. But that's more associated with, like, Arabian cultures, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that legend could
have
spread.
There is evidence in the fossil record of huge birds.
Boas. Boas are huge birds.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're flightless.
Mm.
True.
But a bird, and a very large bird, and from the same kind of part of the world.
Mm-hmm. True. I mean,
that'd be interesting.
I suppose it's feasible.
Yeah. But still, It's
just a little hard to believe, that's all. But I suppose it's feasible.
Well, you're the bird expert, Jack.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure. I'm not really doubting this at all. I mean, I'm not putting a whole lot of faith in the photography because that, I guess, like was mentioned before, that could easily be faked. Mm-hmm. You know, he did mention that he bought it from the guy for a few dollars. So,
kernel of truth.
Yeah, but the story, I think, there might be some seeds of truth into that.
The story. I mean, Dr. Donovan knows that the story is well documented. That a number of people have reported hearing these tales of the Ropen in various forms, or the Great Flyer, or the Terrible Flyer.
All based out of New Guinea or from other locations around the world?
From various parts of New Guinea, yes.
This is a very common legend, then.
But it's people are aware of it.
And it's always described as like a bird-like being.
Well, it's a mammal.
It's just described as a great flying beast. All right.
Okay, so.
I'm obviously no expert in any of these fields that you guys are all experts in, but it just seems to me like any kind of a primitive culture living out in the jungle is going to be afraid of things under the ground, in the bushes, and up in the trees, over your head. It's just going to be one of those things that people...
Very possibly.
They're naturally terrified of things that are going to eat you from above or eat you from below. And in the jungle, there's lots of those things.
I mean, and it flies at night, so maybe it's some sort of bat or something. I mean, there's legends of, like, bat creatures, bat gods. Look, in any culture all over the world.
Hell, vampires.
True.
Maybe it's just their version of a vampire.
And they can take weird forms. I mean, in the Philippines, there's legends of women who are vampires that can separate themselves from their bodies and fly around as like a ball of organs and a head with big bat-like wings and suck the fetuses out of pregnant mothers.
Oh my
it's pretty
God,
gruesome.
Where the hell do you read these things? That's How disgusting. Holy crap. I think I want to go back to Texas.
I've learned some interesting things. I don't know how true the legends are. Obviously not if they're legends. But there's always a precedence for the creation of some sort of monster. And I mean, there are reports of dragons all over the place in other cultures. So maybe there is some sort of precedent here that kind of just spread through different jungle cultures.
Wow,
Dr. White, by the way, is enjoying the familiar taste of a cold pint of Tui's, or whatever they drank in 1924. I don't know if it was Tui's. I'm not an expert on Australian beers of the 1920s.
You did a good job with it, though.
What do you all want to do tomorrow?
Well, do we have any more leads we should be investigating?
Well, according to the itinerary that you've got, tomorrow is going to be largely taken up with going over the manifest.
Oh,
and we did drop the manifest off, didn't we?
Well, yeah, it was all due to be loaded while you were away. Between sort of you leaving and 4 o'clock, you were told it would all be loaded onto the ship.
Right.
Maybe after lunch, I just want to take some time to head into the city or town, whatever, and get some of those items that the professor told us about.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, I would also maybe like to do a little more research in city on the Ropen and like some of the local legends of the place and a little bit about Papua New Guinea when we're on our way there. It'd be a good thing to know a little bit about it, I think, going in.
You might be able to find something in a bookshop. or something.
Well, probably nothing more than we already know.
Yeah, there's no university in Darwin.
Oh, okay, okay.
But we probably collectively know more than most people. That's why it's unexplored.
Most of the books that would be of use to you are already aboard the ship.
Yeah, we've already read.
Dr. Morton's
cabin. These grilled shrimp are just excellent. You know, I've never heard of barbecuing shrimp.
Somebody had to say it.
Shrimp and a barbie.
Is that
how they refer to it?
All right, folks, what are we going to do tomorrow? Oh, you said we're going to just check our manifests.
Pedro. We're checking the manifest.
Probably
and we're
the
making
first
sure
half
did.
Of the day would be taken up doing that. And I mean, you know, you're welcome to spend some time seeing the sights of Darwin.
Well, is there any sight? Just right in the middle of the town, there's just a big lump that's the site.
That's the site.
The single site in Darwin.
People come from miles around to look at the lump.
Yeah. Well, it's the world's biggest lump.
The Darwin thing.
I'm sure there's something interesting to see in Darwin.
What is it, the Darwin thing? Sure. And I might haven't got a bloody clue. It's just a thing. It's over there.
This place is famous, isn't it? It's this historical place here where this is where the evolution of the species was written, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yes, the entire town of Darwin wrote on the origin of the species.
Yeah. This is where it happened.
Charles Darwin.
Happened right here.
Charles Darwin.
On top of the Darwin lump. Is where it happened.
The Darwin lump.
It's never going away, you realize.
Well, no, it's evolving.
Ha ha ha.
It sounds like maybe you should get that lump checked out by a doctor then, if it's evolving.
In any case.
Well, I mean, it's only been, at this point, it's been Darwin for, I think, about nearly 15 years.
If there's nothing else to do for the evening, I think I'm probably just about done.
Same.
I may hang around a bit and look and see if I can find some female companionship, but I don't see any females in this area.
Well, this female companion is going to leave and go back to the ship.
Do you need somebody to walk you back to the ship, my dear?
No, I think I can handle it, PJ.
All right.
It's called Darwin because the Beagle sailed into the harbour during its surveying of the area.
Oh, really?
And John Clements Wickham named the region Port Darwin in honour of their former shipmate, Charles Darwin, who had sailed with them on the ship's previous voyage.
Okay.
And that became the town of Palmerston, which is what it used to be called.
In
1911, it became Darwin.
Gotcha.
And at the time you're visiting there, the most famous thing that you know about it is that about 6 years ago, the people there burnt an effigy of the local administrator and demanded his resignation in what was known as the Darwin Rebellion.
Typical Australians, though.
Well, they are typical Australians in that they are Australians.
Yep.
And they say Barbie. All right.
Trip on that Barbie.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to bed.
And yeah, if you're going on about the shrimps on the Barbie, there's bound to be a 1920s Australian standing somewhere near you just going, no idea what they're bloody going on about. Some bloody American thing or something.
If it doesn't have Vegemite on it. All right. So I'm just killing time.
1924, mate. We're all eating bully beef.
Right.
Bully beef on toast.
So yeah, I'm just relaxing on the ship, kind of you know, reading through some of the books that I've borrowed from Arthur, I believe I borrowed from. Or who was it I borrowed from? But I borrowed from somebody.
Yep, okay. So, yeah, you read up as best you can the next day, which is Saturday the 16th of August. Yeah, you know, you wake up at a reasonable hour, quite early. The ship's crew serve you something approaching breakfast. I mean, it's a bit more civilized than things were on the Marquesita. It's not, I mean, it's still not like a, it's not a cruise ship, but it's not like a grotty cargo ship like the Marquesita is. They have proper cabins. They're used to taking paying customers up to New Guinea. They're used to dealing with academics. They've taken part in a lot of surveys. You know, they tell you they've recently had geologists on board, so they know how to treat you. They're not in any way put out by your presence here. You're paying customers. Passengers is the word I think that I wanted to use. So after breakfast, it takes most of the morning, really. You finish about lunchtime. Maybe after lunch, there are one or two jobs still to be done. But everything that should be there is there. Yes, I'm not going to. I think we'll speed things up and there won't be any problems with the equipment. You've got, I mean, there's dried foods, there's all sorts of things. I mean, things like fresh fruit and things, fresh foods you'll be getting when you arrive, buying them from local traders. Mm-hmm. But you have dried foods, expedition supplies, lots of khaki clothing, and tents, fly screens, mosquito nets, and the like. Pretty much everything, the basic supplies, unless you want anything specific, in which case you have this afternoon to get it.
I'm kind of curious, is malaria a problem in this area?
No idea.
Well, I'd imagine if malaria were a problem, it would be in the expedition supplies.
The expedition that went there didn't report any malaria or dengue.
Okay.
All right.
Well, everything's on my list.
Actually, you do know that they had problems with tropical ulcers.
Huh. Okay.
What? Mm-hmm. What in God's name are tropical ulcers?
If you in many cases, if you cut yourself or are bitten by something and start scratching it, you will get an ulcerated lesion because of the conditions there, the general mm-hmm. uncleanliness and the humidity and the temperature.
Wet,
huh.
Sort of like trench foot.
Well, it's just, you know, your body's under a lot of stress. It's difficult for you to.
Right.
It is a hostile environment. You must remember you're going into a hostile environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, party, would any of you like to pick up any specialist supplies on the afternoon of Saturday the 16th of August?
Well, I suppose I'd probably pick up, if I don't have it already, my gear for, you know, digging stuff up, brushing stuff off, kind of storing
materials. That sort of thing, you'd already have that with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
You should top up your ammunition you used in your target practice.
I should probably get some sort of, like, gun of some sort. At least some sort of handgun, just for personal protection.
Is there any way, this might sound extremely weird, but is there any way I can get a harpoon gun?
Why do you need a harpoon gun?
For my reasons only.
Well, I mean, it's not traditionally a whaling area, but I'll let you make I'll let you make a luck roll, but you'll have to do it with a penalty.
Dice. Well, something I can have that will can attach a rope to. But if I'll make a luck roll.
Oh, like a grappling gun. Gotcha.
Okay, I pass. I got a 46.
Did you roll 2 percentage dice?
I got a 31.
Okay, so that'll be a 46 then. Okay, well, you find a...
something so that, you know, can be hooked up or two.
Well, you do find a harpoon gun, but the harpoon gun you find is like a ship-mounted harpoon gun for a whaling vessel.
Okay.
I think you were looking for a grappling gun, is what you meant to say.
Grappling have to be. You're not going to find anything like that in Darwin. It's they've no need for it.
What about a crossbow? That I can
make another luck roll and see if you can find a crossbow.
Do people use crossbows for anything when you've got guns?
No, I don't. I got a 71, so
crossbow, mate. What do you want a bloody crossbow for? Was your William Tell?
says
the man in the shop that looks like it might sell crossbows, but doesn't.
Okay.
Would anyone else like to do anything?
I would imagine I would try to go at least find like a handgun, just a basic handgun, something that I can use in a pinch.
Well, depending on what you want, you could find, I would imagine, you could find like a 38 revolver.
Mm-hmm. That's what I figured. Something like that is fine.
It might take a couple of hours to find a sort of less than reputable gun shop that's prepared to sell a handgun to someone who's just about to get on a ship out of the country.
Now so. you gotta be, you don't want to get something too powerful. You're a little bit more delicate than a. You know, some of these big guns will knock you on
your choices are very limited in that you can buy a 38 revolver or a 22.
What you want to look for is a Derringer, but you might not be able to find one.
No, there's nothing like that. It's a very limited selection. There's a fair number of rifles and shotguns, but not a great many handguns.
Well. A rifle.
Working guns, like, you know, shotguns and especially rifles that people will use on the farms and in the bush. There's no shortage.
All right, well, then a rifle it is.
Rifle's probably going to set you back about $300.
Rifle or shotgun, something in that range. If that's what they have, that's what they have.
You could get a shotgun probably for about $60 or $70, just a double-barreled shotgun.
Mm-hmm. All right. So
nothing special.
It's going to be special. Hilarious when she shoots
Let's start.
It.
Pijo. Couple
of boxes of shells.
Pijo.
A couple of boxes of shells and a shotgun.
I held my own pushing you in a arm wrestling contest. I think I can handle a shotgun.
Oh. Is that how you remember it? I choose not to remember it that way. All right, folks.
Well, if no one else has anything to do.
If there's... I guess there's not really anything lacking that we don't already have. So I think I'm fine.
Jack, you go and buy, you went to buy some trade goods?
Yeah, I was thinking some tobacco and maybe a bunch of small, cheap knives.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's something quite easy to find. You can probably even, you know, if you're buying in bulk like that, you can probably come to an arrangement with someone in the ironmongers, and I think they've just bush knives, you know.
Yeah, nothing fancy.
Yeah.
Maybe we should bring some small bags of rice.
The plan.
There is already rice in the trade goods. So there's rice and sago in the trade goods that were set out for the expedition.
Okay. Put some in a Tupperware container.
Yeah, I was just wondering that. Would the tobacco even hold up in a jungle-like atmosphere?
Well, it tends to be sort of wrapped up.
You'd have to keep it dry.
Yeah, not greaseproof paper, but
like wax paper or something like that.
Yeah, wax paper. Yes.
Yeah,
and it's in twists as well. I mean, it's not loose tobacco. It's you'd be buying like big twists of tobacco.
Okay.
Right. And then from there, you could probably just portion it off as you needed.
Yeah, you would just get a knife and cut off a section.
You know, I think I'm fairly well armed. I've got a hunting knife, I got a machete, and I got a shotgun. What else do I need?
A grappling gun.
Well, all the rest of my equipment's on the ship, so.
I got the impression that he was thinking something more along the lines of a spear gun, but I, you know, like for shooting fish underwater, but I don't think they'd even invented such a thing at this point.
The only thing like that you can find is a great big harpoon gun for the front of a ship.
Yeah,
well, there you go. And that
would be very expensive.
Your ship, you can use that.
That would be a bit of modern high tech kit as well, because most whalers are still using hand thrown harpoons.
And a handheld spear gun, you'd assume that you could breathe underwater, you know, with scuba gear, but they don't have scuba gear yet, I don't think.
No, they have scuba gear, but it's big, bulky metal scuba gear.
Well, I'm not sure.
It's not self-contained stuff. No, they drop divers down with a line connected to a pump on it.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so it wouldn't do much good for fishing.
I just thought that it would be good in case we do encounter that thing.
Yeah, you're gonna jeepers creepers that thing, aren't you?
That was the plan.
I thought it was a good idea.
Well, on a similar note, in the equipment that would have been sent out for Dr. Ardu, you would have a mist net. Which is a large net, a large, very fine net that is set up to catch birds.
Okay.
Allowing you to catch and release live birds.
Hmm.
Well,
let's hope that thing doesn't fly into your net then.
Yeah.
Whether that would hold a giant flying monster is unlikely.
It won't.
It would probably go straight through it, eating some of the birds in the net on the way through, I would imagine. But, you know.
It's meant for little finches, not giant rodents, right?
That's right. So unless you want to do anything with your last afternoon in civilization.
No, I think I'm good. I think I have what I need.
Well, they don't have what I need, but...
Well, they have what you need, they just don't have what you want.
In that case, the day comes to an end.
How long is the
yes.
Slip across?
Yeah.
I'm just looking. it's about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Wow. Is there any way?
I mean, you know, Papua New Guinea is one of the largest islands on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a very long coastline. It takes in a steamship. It takes quite a while to get around it.
Mick, is there any way during the 2 week journey that I can somehow craft something in that thing as just the makeshift one?
You are really, really, really desperate to get a harpoon gun, aren't you?
No, not a harpoon gun. Something that'll have a rope or something like that, to at least.
Well, I mean, what sort of applicable skill would you be trying to use? I mean, you could probably... I mean, if you got to New Guinea and you were nice to a tribesman, you could probably buy a spear from him and tie a rope to it.
There you go. Go low tech.
Guess that'll work.
But remember, you're a biologist, not a hunter.
Yeah, I mean,
what's your throw? I mean,
really, have any applicable skills to sort of for the building of improvised projectile weapons?
You know, I think I would, over the course of that week and a half, probably continue working on my shotgun skills.
Apologies, by the way, to any biologists watching this who do actually have very well-developed improvised projectile building skills.
Can confirm, am biologist.
Don't want to generalize.
No biologists were harmed in the making of this campaign.
Well then, we get to dinner, really? Mm-hmm. You have a pretty basic but quite enjoyable dinner, and the captain brings out a bottle of something that in the mind of a sea captain might be classified as wine, but to the palate of the drinker may contain hints of vinegar. But it's something with which you toast your last day in civilization. With that, and dreams of flying monsters, you go off to your beds. And the following morning, you set sail.
Back on the sea.
Back on the sea, and... The voyage is so uneventful that we're just going to skip it, I think.
All right.
Because we've already spent far too long on a boat killing time.
Am I able to practice my shotgun skill in that uneventful journey at least?
Well, I mean, you could, but you've only got two packets of shells.
True. Okay. Point.
So they're going to be exhausted quite rapidly.
And we also point out to you that there's
no guarantee that you're going to get any ammunition.
There's basically with your shotgun, you just got to point it in the direction of where you want to kill something and pull the trigger.
Good
and
point.
It's going to spread out. There's no accuracy to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a boomstick.
Hit yourself in
it's
the
for
face.
It's for putting big holes in things.
Yeah.
Yep.
For killing that rabbit that's running away from you, or that giant bird roping creature coming at you.
All right.
Okay.
A giant angry bird that has a harpoon stuck through its back end.
Yeah.
Rope tied
angry
to cord
birds. Got thrown by a trebuchet.
Just it goes flying away with Corey hanging. I mean, Dr. John White hanging on a rope. Flying up with the
truck. I told you it would work.
All right. So we're skipping ahead to Mana Quarry.
We are skipping ahead to you pull in at Hollandia where you pick up I think the bulk of your perishable supplies you're going to pick up in Hollandia.
And where are we supposed to meet Wepu?
You are going to meet Wepu. Yes, you do meet Wepu in Hollandia, so we'll go to Hollandia.
Okay.
Which we have a picture. So Hollandia, for some reason it hasn't come up. Done. There we go. Hollandia
It's actually kind of pretty.
It's quite a simple looking place. It's wooden buildings. And full of wooden buildings and a few, you can see there's sort of some more sort of native-y looking huts here and there. And the majority of buildings are quite simple. It's not a, I mean, it passes, but it is the main center of the Dutch presence in Dutch New Guinea. But it's not a sort of overly built up place by any means.
Well, I'm really quite surprised. It's not as flat as I thought it was going to be. There's going to be a challenge to.
Well, I mean, it's an island. What did you expect?
Well, I expected, you know, a gentle, slow rise to the middle and then a gentle, slow rise back to the other side. But, I mean, drop down to the other side.
Well, even though you're just taking on supplies and your guide, it does give you your first taste, just, you know, setting foot on the dock, which is
Is this a volcanic island?
There are volcanoes on the island, yes.
Hmm. Interesting.
Active.
There you go. Just shoot your giant bird into the volcano.
It is known for them to be.
Kentucky Fried Ropan.
But it's your first experience of It's your first experience of New Guinea, and the sheer physical effect of the temperature and humidity, even on the coast, is quite overwhelming. I mean, it's like you walk, even with a nice breeze coming in off the sea, it is oppressively hot.
Feels like Houston.
You're on the dock. There's no shelter at all, and you can feel the heat.
Best be drinking crushing. A lot of water. We're gonna get dehydrated if we don't.
While the crew is getting your perishables for you, it seems that word gets around, and a gentleman comes walking down the dock towards you. I will show you a photo of that gentleman as well. Hang on. Apologies for my incredible crapness with presenting things. There's a gentleman in sort of indeterminate age, but probably middle-aged. And from the waist up, he's dressed in quite traditional clothes. And from the waist down, he's wearing a pair of khaki shorts and some sandals.
Okay, so clearly a native guy.
Clearly a native gentleman. And
this has to be Wepu.
Oh, what have I done? I'm just sorry. Oh my god, I've just started Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft New Guinea.
Stop sharing. Oops. Yes. So this gentleman comes down, and surprisingly, he greets you in English.
Well, good
and
afternoon.
And introduces himself as your guide.
All right, you must be Wepu then. Nice to meet you.
How do you do, Miss? Misters?
Chase. Sharon Chase.
Wepu.
Nice to meet you, Wepu.
And nice to meet you, Wepu.
Hello, hello, hello.
So where did you learn English, Wepu?
From the missionary fella.
Have you guided a lot of groups into the jungle area?
Not into the bird's head, no.
Hmm.
You're the first people who wanted to go there.
Why is that?
No, no one goes there. It's, you know, it's a long way away. Difficult to get to.
Understandable.
How long of a journey is it to get to the bird's head?
Oh, from here, in your boat, maybe 3-4 days to get to Manawakri. Manawakri, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll pick up the local fellas, and we'll go down the Kiba Valley. We'll take a boat and then go to the first village there.
All right.
And then, from there we'll start walking.
All right. Sounds like a plan to me.
Do we know roughly how much time we'll be out in the actual jungle then area?
I don't know. Whereabouts are you going? Where do you want me to take you?
Oh, I guess I meant as far as our task or our mission. Yeah, like, are we supposed to spend a week and then turn around and come back? Like, are we hiking in 3 days and coming back for 3 days?
Well, he looks quite confused, and he said, I was told 5 weeks.
5 weeks, okay.
Yeah, at least.
5 weeks. I thought that's what we were doing, 5-6 weeks.
And quite honestly, it's probably not going to be sufficient for my job, but...
Mm-hmm.
We got
it'll be a start. You'll make a dent.
Yeah,
but you'll have to go and see the governor fella as well when you get to Manokwari.
All right.
Because you can't unload without his permission. He has to.
Right.
The Dutch don't like people coming in. You've got all your papers, haven't you?
We should.
Of course,
yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. The Dutch don't like people coming in there. They think it's full of gold. They want all the gold out of the ground. There's no gold there.
Well,
they think there is.
Green gold, perhaps, but with all the lush life through here.
Is there a green gold?
Well, no,
he looks very confused by this.
I'm sorry, it was a metaphor. It was not meant to be an actual gold that's green. No. I was more referring to the plants in the variety of life in the jungle, not an actual object.
There are lots of plants in the jungle, yeah. He sort of scratches his head and says, sorry, I thought I spoke really good English, but...
It's all right. I didn't mean to confuse you. I forget not everybody is as familiar with just metaphors and stuff. There's a lot of slang and metaphors in English, so I apologize if I confused you.
Yeah, Sharon, he probably doesn't even know what metaphor or slang or any of those words mean.
I mean, it's just a turn of phrase, really. Wow, this shoe leather tastes really good, you guys.
It's So, what is our itinerary?
Oh, no, I won't have to do that. I was going to get Wefu to turn to one of you and go, it's an allegory anyway.
Isn't it ironic?
Don't you think? Little too ironic.
So there's not really much to do here, you know. I mean, once you load it up, we can get off straight away. It'll take about another 20 minutes to load up.
All right.
Let's get our stuff loaded. I suppose we need to do a lot of the work. I certainly do. I don't let people touch my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
Yeah.
Well, and my I've got a lot of delicate instruments, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all going to stay on board that ship until you get down to Manokwari.
Ah, so we don't have to move it on.
You're just taking on, like, sort of, you know, fresh food, the perishables. And, you know, he stands there, spits out a bit of betel nut, rolls himself a cigarette.
Well, Wepu, why don't you come on board and make yourself comfortable? And you said we'll be leaving in about, what did you say, 20 minutes? Or?
Oh, yeah, about 20 minutes. They've just got to load up your stuff, and then we'll be off.
All right. So I'm assuming we kind of all help load up equipment then?
Well, they're probably just getting supplies.
Yeah. And I guess then in that time, I'm relaxing on the deck of the ship.
In one of them lounge chairs with a little blanket over your feet.
Yeah, well, not a blanket over my feet. It's too warm for that. But, you know, taking in some sun. Well, not too much sun. I don't want to burn.
There's some folding wooden chairs, deck chairs, literally deck chairs.
Mm.
You know, I could get used to a tropical lifestyle, I think.
I live in Odessa, and I'm still not used to this kind of temperature. I've lived there my whole life. When that breeze comes in off the ocean and it's really hot and it's really steamy, and yeah, it's like getting in the water. It's like getting in the bath. There's no relief from the temperature.
It's not bad here. It's very hot when we get into the jungle.
So this isn't hot.
This isn't bad.
This is, well, there's a breeze from the sea here. It's nice here.
Good point.
When we get up into the high jungle, then you can't feel the breeze anymore.
Yeah, it'll be pretty humid in there, I'd imagine.
Very
wet.
Like you said, we definitely need to bring some water so that we don't. Oh well, we're gonna bring water. Of course, we're gonna bring water.
Yeah, we have to make sure we keep our salt adequate and our water adequate, I would imagine, so we don't dehydrate.
We don't want to get sunstroke.
Yeah. Especially not out in the jungle.
Well, you don't need much. We're not taking on much here anyway, because all the villages, you'll be able to buy food in the villages and trade with them.
Right.
They've all got food. There's plenty of food up there. Plenty of food. It's good land.
I would imagine. Must be very rich and lush through there. Good for growing things.
Oh, it's very good. It's very good land. They've got some good gardens up there.
Cool.
Well, we're going to go... We'll go through where the Hattam people are.
Hmm.
Which is good. I speak good Hattam.
All right. Anything we should avoid so as not to like offend them or anything? Anything in particular?
Women shouldn't touch men. Men shouldn't touch women.
Gotcha.
The men don't touch the women.
You shouldn't touch women that you don't know.
I see.
And
so they're possessive of that women. Men
don't touch women. Well, it's just rude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't. If you they'll shake hands, but you know, you don't hug people and.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know. And just you know, it's okay, because these tribes up here, they know, they've met the Dutch, and they've met people from other places. People belong to other places, but when we go further than the valley, if you go further than the valley, then you know, there might be villages where they haven't met white people before,
mm-hmm.
and they might be worried.
Wow,
I wouldn't want to spook them too much.
That's amazing that there are places in the world where people haven't met white people.
Most of this island.
Wow,
I can imagine.
And many places
that far into the jungle.
Even
for me, if I went too far, I wouldn't be able to speak the language anymore.
Mm. I think the captain of the
tribes. Wow.
The captain of the Badly Jean is waving at us.
Yeah, we should probably get going.
Indeed. Well, you set off again, and again we'll skip to the Saturday, the 24th of August, when you dock at Manor Quarry, which is very, very unlike Hollandia. Mm-hmm. Hollandia is very much a
Dutch settlement.
A Dutch settlement, and Manor Quarry is something entirely different.
Nick, I think every time you've mentioned Manor Quarry, I've written it down in my notes and I've spelled it differently about 100
times. It's, I looked it up. It's actually Manokwari. Manor Quarry.
I thought it was Manor Quarry with an H.
Yeah, I thought it was Manor Quarry with a Q and a U, but.
Nope.
Well,
now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
This is the site that greets you.
Oh, you interesting.
To Manor Quarry. Hmm. A group of locals and a few Dutch as well. Two or three Dutch people are standing there. It's a bit of an occasion, really, because, you know, other than the occasional trade boat, no one goes to Manor Quarry.
Hmm.
It's the end of the earth. You know, it's very much, and it's quite takes a couple of goes for the ship to successfully dock and find a part of the dock where it's at the right level. But eventually you weigh anchor and you put in this rather extraordinary looking village.
Oh.
Is that like their church or their...
That's just one of their buildings.
It's beautiful. They built that all by hand?
Yes.
Like...
Wow. It's really impressive architecture. Wow.
Looks like a church, but I wonder what it is.
Well, it might be like a fishing hut.
As the ship finishes docking, you notice there's more and more people coming out. It's quite an occasion.
Wow. They're rolling out the red carpet.
There's lots of children appearing from sort of nearby buildings and making quite a lot. The children are getting very excited. There's a boat.
Can I toss them a few, like, hard candies?
You can if you want, yes. Yeah.
Fight for it.
I would caution against that.
Yeah, well, just be careful of your wallets.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think they're mostly trade culture here, though. What use would they have for money?
Well, just be careful of things in your pocket.
Okay.
Like little hands.
The people here, in comparison to the rest of the people of the Bird's Head, as Wepu would explain to you, that the people here are more used to dealing with foreigners.
Well, of course, I'm speaking as a 1920s somebody who has done some traveling.
Just, gotcha.
You know, they live alongside the Dutch, so you know this is just exciting because we're new people coming from somewhere else.
Well, if they were Dutch children, I would say be sure and make sure that your pockets are
secure. Yeah, you'd hear them coming. You'd hear the clacking of their clogs.
Oh, God.
Dutch people, you can send all your complaint emails to Tom.
Into the darkness.club.
I'm channeling Austin Powers, the Dutch.
I love the Netherlands.
All right, well, I would imagine we would... start disembarking, right?
Yeah, it takes I mean you get there probably about, I'd say it's about 11 a.m. when you pull in, and it's going to take most of the day to unload because there's nowhere near as many people or experienced stevedores like there were at the docks in Darwin.
Right.
And as this is going on, Captain Moss, Keith Moss, captain of the Betty Jean, points out to I think Pijo, probably.
Yes, Captain.
It's, you see that fella over there? You may have noticed that all Australians have now got this exactly the same accent and inflection.
Yeah, and I've actually managed to start to understand you.
Trying to talk with a different Australian accent. Oh, yeah? You see that fella over there? Right?
Yes, I see him.
That fella over there with the hat on.
Yeah.
The Panama hat on. That's the local governor.
Hmm.
Yes, but we were told that we needed to talk to the governor.
Yeah, that's Van Croyt. You want to go and talk to that fella? He's the fella you need to show your visas to and stuff.
Right, right.
And he'll sort you out.
Well, thank you very much, Captain. It was a lovely ride on your ship.
Oh, yeah?
Lovely trip.
Yeah, thank you.
You definitely know how to treat passages.
Yeah, you go and sort that out, and by the time you're finished, we'll have your stuff down on the docks there.
Okay.
No worries.
All right, so I would imagine we go and we talk to the governor as soon as possible.
Mr. Van Croyt.
Van Croyt.
Van Croyt. Van Croyt.
K-R-O-I-G-H-T. Van Croyt.
Typical Dutch name.
Pardon me, Mr. Van Croyt. We are the expedition from the Miskatonic. We need to show you our papers.
I just quickly want to apologize to Dutch people everywhere for this. Yes, what can I do for you?
All right, so we show him the papers. We were told we needed to speak with you concerning, like, offloading in our visas.
I'm not going
to
do an accent. My Dutch accent is actually bordering on a hate crime.
well.
Right, so what do we got here then? Come on, let's have a look. So, right, visas, that's all in order. Right, so you're the survey team from Miskatonic.
That's
correct, sir.
Okay, right. You give me a second. Come with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes you off to a shack at the end of the dock. And it's literally just
a literal
shed,
shack.
A shed with a desk and a couple of filing cabinets in it. And from one of the filing cabinets, you notice it's the one that includes the letter M. For Miskatonic, he retrieves a folder and pulls out a few documents and starts having a look through them and says, right, so you're going up the Tamarau Mountains then, are you?
I believe that's correct, yes, sir.
That's where we've got you as. We've got you going in and mapping the Tamarau Mountains for us.
That's my job.
As far in as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the rest of your team are going in with you. Right. We weren't expecting you until Monday.
Captain Monson, really good job getting you, sir.
Well, we can get I'll send someone out and see if I can get your bearers down today. They might not be here until tomorrow morning though.
That will be fine, sir.
We don't mind.
I suppose we could probably find you somewhere to sleep. Yes, hang on. And he calls over an underling.
Mm-hmm.
And barks something at him in pidgin. And he runs off. And it's right. Okay. Yes. We'll be back in a minute. We'll sort you out somewhere to stay tonight, and we'll try and get your bearers down.
That's very kind of you, sir.
Yes, thank you, sir.
We've got a storage shed where we can lock up all your stuff. You need to lock it up in there overnight in the customs shed because these bloody people they'll steal anything. Can't leave anything lying around here. A nightmare, this place.
Well, if you don't mind, sir, I have some rather delicate equipment. That's going to stay with me. I'll sleep on top of it.
Yeah, whatever you need. Take whatever you need.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just here to stamp the papers. There's nothing you need, is there? I mean, there's nothing we've got.
Well, I think we should have all of our supplies with us.
We're quite well stocked.
You got any cigarettes?
I do believe we have cigarettes, yes, sir. Did you want a cigarette, sir?
I brought it. I don't smoke, but I brought some for sharing.
Yeah, if you've got a packet of cigarettes.
I've actually got a packet of Chesterfields, if you'd like them.
He takes both of the packets of cigarettes that are offered to him.
Okay.
Without so much as a thank you, and just tucks one in his pocket and sticks the other one in the filing cabinet, which he then locks. And says they'll steal anything. He doesn't seem to have a very high opinion of the people there. He's a very red-faced, sunburnt man. It doesn't take a psychology role to work out that he's not terribly happy with this posting.
Being posted out here, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically, I mean, he's the governor, but there's nothing here to be governor of. There's just a little town. There's four or five Dutch people, some locals, and a ship every 3 months.
So very boring for him.
Yeah. There isn't a smell.
spot hidden, smell hidden.
Smell hidden.
Yeah, everyone do a spot hidden.
Like in your dog campaign.
Yeah.
Oh, smell hidden. Yeah, I really, really do smell whatever it is. I just rolled a 7.
Got a 19.
Failed.
Those of you who do succeed, there is a noticeable smell of gin about this man.
He doesn't
look like he's drunk, but you know he's. He does smell a bit like a drinker. Anyway, he sorts out eventually after about 15 minutes. He sorts out somewhere for you to stay for the night. So you clamber together any valuables they've got. He gets the rest of the stuff put into the shed and locked up.
Mm-hmm.
Hustled off to what looks like another storage shed with some makeshift beds in there.
Okay.
Well, looks like somewhere they put up crews or something from the ships. It's very basic, a bit dusty, but you are able.
Serviceable.
Yeah, I mean it's not nice. It's hot and it's muggy.
Right.
And it's very difficult to sleep, but you do after a while you do manage to get off and you drift to sleep. And we will return to you in the morning and we will begin your expedition proper. And that's we'll leave it at that for today.
Excellent. All right.
Cool. Okay, our players included Jen Coulter, Corey Heisted, Sean Little, Thomas McKeon, Jeff Wilkins, and myself with Mick Swan as Keeper of the Secrets. Please consider visiting our Patreon site. If each of you were to contribute just $2 or $3 a month, we'd be able to cover all of our expenses without any problem. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our show free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Our musical intro, Birch Run Primal Drive, was composed by our good friend Kevin McLeod. And is available it's used royalty free under the Creative Commons Attribution License. Feel free to send us comments on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed our broadcast, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Rayleigh inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.